Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, January 24th, 2021. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope everybody had a great week. Coming off the heels, if you're a UFC fan, of the huge Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier rematch happened last night. Great night of fights, some really good stuff. So if you're a fan of mixed martial arts, you know, I'm sure you're still hyped up from that, as I am. But today, we're here to talk about professional wrestling. So I'm going to go through a list of topics for today's episode, and then we'll jump right into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we're going to be talking results for Impact Wrestling, MLW Fusion, 205 Live, NXT UK, Ring of Honor, and I have a recap of the latest BTE episode titled Duped. So we'll talk being the elite at the end of today's show. But before we get into it, as always, you know I have my recommended show for you on independentwrestling.tv, and the show that I have chosen this week is Paradigm Pro Wrestling's UWFI Rules Contender Series Episode 5, which is also their Season 1 finale. So once again, the company is called Paradigm Pro Wrestling, that's spelled P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, and the show is called UWFI Rules Contenders Series Episode 5. So as you can tell by the title, and if you listen to this show, I've talked about previous episodes of the Contender Series, but this is the fifth episode in the season finale of So Paradigm Pro does a lot of different kind of themed shows, and you know, sometimes they have UWFI rule shows, which is essentially like old school shoot fighting rules where you know, there's no pinfalls, but you can submit, you can be knocked out, stuff like that. But you know, no pinfalls, it's not traditional wrestling. You do see some traditional wrestling mixed in, but it's made to be more so like an MMA fight, like a hybrid rules MMA fight, similar to like Shudo and that kind of stuff from like the really early days of mixed martial arts. And what they did with this contender series is they put in a lot of people that don't have a lot of experience in kind of this style of fighting or style of wrestling. And what they would normally do is they put like a big match on at the end. Some people that are you would be more familiar with in these types of contests, and then the rest of the matches for the most part are like it's almost like a feeler, like a test to see if these kind of matches are for you. And Paradigm does a whole bunch of stuff like this. They also do like hardcore match. Like it's hard to explain. Like for instance, they had a whole tournament last year where it was half UWFI rules and half street fights, and it was one tournament. It was a pretty cool concept, and it's exactly how it sounded. Like, half the matches were contested under these rules, and the other half were just no holds barred, no rules, street fights. You know, so this was the Contender Series, once again, Episode 5, and these are the matches to expect. We had Big Beef, Gnarls Garvin, taking on Austin Connolly, Lexus Montez taking on Bobby Beverly. We had the MidwestTerritory.com Championship, where Chase Holiday put his big chain, they don't have a title belt for that, it's a big chain, on the line against Jordan Blake. We had Ron Mathis versus Akira, and in the main event, we had Matthew Justice taking on Aaron Williams. So to highlight some of the talent here, Gnarls Garvin, Big Beef, I love seeing more of him. He's somebody that I think I first became aware of through the Scenic City Invitational in Chattanooga. I think that's where I saw him first. But I've been following him for a little while now, and he just keeps getting better. And he's a guy who can be a real force in independent wrestling going forward. He's just going to keep getting better. I mean, he's got a different look to him. He's got a lot of power moves that he does that are really cool. I don't want to spoil anything from this show, but he did some really cool stuff during this show. Looked like an animal out there. Someone else, Bobby Beverly, he was on this show. He's the former champion. Actually, the tournament I was just talking about, the half UWFI, half street fight rules tournament, Bobby Beverly actually walked away from that tournament as the winner and the champion of the whole thing. I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest Bobby Beverly fan. He's a part of the Forgotten Fight team. It's him, Flash Thompson, and speaking of Forgotten, I can't think of the name of their, they have like a manager. And honestly, the gimmick just doesn't really work for me. I'm just going to be honest about it. Like, Bobby Beverly doesn't do a ton for me. Flash Thompson does nothing for me as far as like when he's done some of these UWFI rules matches, and it's really hard to explain, but like the gimmick like doesn't click for me at all. His in-ring doesn't click for me. Pretty much nothing about Flash Thompson clicks for me. And him and Bobby Beverly, I just don't think are that well suited for UWFI rules stuff. And their manager is like this guy who I've never seen wrestle or anything. And I mean, maybe I'm just being ignorant to it. I don't know. But I will say this. I have talked to many others within independent wrestling about these things because, you know, I have a lot of conversations behind the scenes with a lot of people that are actually very influential when it comes to a lot of these promotions. And I'll give them honest feedback. You know, I don't give it if I'm not asked, but every now and then they'll ask me like what I think about certain matches and shows, especially because I'm so tied to mixed martial arts as well. So when it comes to these kind of shows, there are certain competitors where I'll be like, man, that person is a great fit. I would keep doing that. And then there's other competitors and stuff going on where I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think it really works. And I think that's why they do a lot of the kind of testing out that they do on shows like this. But I will just say this. I'm not the only person behind the scenes that is not huge on the Forgotten Fight Team. I'll just put it that way. I am not alone. Another person on the show, Chase Holiday, I think he's very good. Has a lot of potential still. Does a great job. And has done a great job with that MidwestTerritory.com championship. You know, it's a different kind of concept. It's like a, I don't even know how to explain it. It's a gigantic chain with like a gigantic medallion on it that they use as the, you know, instead of a belt for that title. But, you know, it does make it stand out and make it different. So, you know, in wrestling, I always applaud people, you know, trying something different, you know. We also had Akira on this show who is just, I mean, I don't even know how to describe Akira. He's a psycho, but in like the best way possible when it comes to professional wrestling. Like, he does a lot of stuff that isn't really for me, because if you listen to this show, you know that I'm not like the biggest deathmatch wrestling fan. I can take it in small doses, and if like the story's there and I'm in the right mindset and the right mood, I can really get into some of it, but sometimes it just kind of goes too far in my opinion. But I also know there's a gigantic audience for it. So it's not something where I'm saying, like, there shouldn't be these matches and stuff. I'm not saying there shouldn't be, you know, deathmatch wrestling. Because there are a lot of people that really, really enjoy it. And it definitely has its fan base. And I've seen Akira do a mix of a lot of different stuff. I mean, he was in this Contender Series rules matches, you know, the UWFI rules matches for this Contender Series, I should say. And, I mean, he held his own in there. Did good stuff. I mean, looks great. And, you know, his wheelhouse, in my opinion, is more so I say deathmatch, but, and it is that, but, and he's really good at that stuff, but some of the stuff I've seen him do in deathmatches were like, I just don't know why anyone would put their body through some of the stuff he's put his body through, like, some gruesome stuff that I've seen him be a part of, but I especially love his, like, relationship and matches and stuff he's had with Nolan Edward. So I want to shout that out too. Anything that y'all could ever possibly see between Akira and Nolan Edward, I would highly recommend, but just viewer discretion. There are going to be some things where, like, you know, it's they go for it. I'll just put it that way. They go for it. But I am a big fan of Akira and what he's doing. And we have a lot of mutual friends, me and him. And I hear a lot of great things about him behind the scenes and stuff. So, like, you know, I'm definitely happy to see Akira as a part of this UWFI Contender Series, and he's someone to definitely keep your eye on. If you aren't already paying attention to Akira, I would definitely, you know, become educated as fast as possible, because he's a name that I think you're going to be seeing a lot of in 2021. And speaking of really two names that I think you're going to see a lot of 2021, we had Matthew Justice versus Aaron Williams in the main event. I'm a big fan of both these guys. Aaron Williams is, like, as legit as it gets as far as you see that guy and you're like, okay, that guy can kick some ass. Like, totally believable. Matthew Justice, I've said this so many times, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but he's really, like, on that top tier of the totem pole in indie wrestling right now. As far as, I'll put it this way, I'd be surprised if Matthew Justice wasn't signed to NXT or to AEW before the end of 2021. I'd actually be surprised if it took halfway through the year. Like, I think he'll be one of these guys in, like, the first quarter of this year he'll get signed, if that's what he wants. You know, there are some wrestlers, because I believe Matthew Justice was actually signed to WWE Developmental at one point, you know, years back. And, you know, some guys and girls and, you know, any gender, like, there's some people that just, you know, they like doing the indies and they like being their own boss and they like, you know, And I can't speak for any of these people and like their family situations or what their motivations are, but Matthew Justice absolutely has the talent, the look, the charisma, the little bit of crazy that I think you need to be a wrestler. Like, he'll do anything. I've watched him jump off, you know, balconies through tables, but I've also watched him just wrestle straight up, just good wrestling matches. So he's a guy who checks pretty much every box you would want in a mainstream professional wrestler. And Aaron Williams, I can say a lot of the same stuff about. Like, I could see Aaron Williams being, you know, a mainstream, I don't know how to put this. I don't think he's quite at like Matthew Justice's level as far as like checking every single box, but Aaron Williams is solid enough that like I could believe him on any show. Like, if he popped up on like AEW or AEW Dark or something like that and had like a solid match, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think he's a guy who very well could be signed to a major company this year as well. So a lot of great talent on this show, and I just can't stress it enough. I mean, Matthew Justice is just, he's just one of the next big stars, in my opinion, coming out the indies. Aaron Williams, like I said, great stuff. He's just, another thing with Aaron Williams, he's consistent. He is just, every time I watch Aaron Williams wrestle, it's just consistently good. Which is like a great thing to have as a pro wrestler. It's reliable. I know anytime I watch an Aaron Williams match, like, I'm going to be entertained. And then everyone else I highlighted on this show, I mean, and even though I, you know, talked kind of down on Bobby Beverly and, you know, Flash Thompson and the Forgotten Fight Team and stuff like that, it's just because that isn't for me. And it isn't for some others that I've talked to. But it's also, a big part of it has to do with within the context of what the UWFI rules are and what their characters are and all this stuff. And that doesn't mean that both guys can't change my mind. Like, I have had my mind changed many times on wrestlers that I didn't think were that good, or I didn't get the hype, or I didn't understand the gimmick, or whatever it was. Perfect example, Marco Stunt. When I first saw Marco Stunt wrestle, it was probably like 3 or so years ago, and he wrestled in Nashville, Tennessee in a bar, the Basement East, for Southern Underground Pro, and my friend Mouse, Robert Bellamy, in my opinion, the best wrestling photographer in the entire world for any company, he's the man. And Mouse like told me before the show, he's like, "Hey man, you ever seen Marco?" And I was like, "Marco, no, I don't know who that is." And he was like, "Yeah, like, he's gonna be on this show. Like, when you see Marco Stunt, like, tell me what you think." Or it was something along those lines, right? And then I saw this, what I thought was a literal child, walk out of the under the entrance. That didn't have an entrance ramp there. It's just like a curtain, and you walk out to the ring and the bar. And I thought it like somebody, I'm not exaggerating, I thought somebody's child had like escaped backstage, and like, you know, I did not think that he was a wrestler. I really didn't. And then I realized, like, oh, okay, so this is the guy that Mouse was talking about. And I watched him wrestle, and I thought it was okay, but it was still a little odd to me. And then I saw him wrestle again, and it felt kind of the same. But after I'd seen him a few times, and then I saw him in there having some just like really, really good matches, and then I realized like what he was doing was all within his wheelhouse. Like, he wasn't going out there and choke slamming people. He wasn't going out there and like holding people over his head. He would do stuff where he'd kick people in the knee, and they'd go down to one knee, and then he'd follow up with like a Hurricane Rana, or someone would throw him into someone, or he'd do like a 450 off the top. It was all things where he'd cut people down to size, or he'd use his size to his advantage. And then I became a huge fan. I was like, I was wrong about this guy. I was totally wrong. This guy's great, what he's doing. And he goes in there. And for people, there's a lot of people who really dislike Marco Stunt, and especially him being a part of AEW. And I get where they're coming from, but when you really break it down and what he's doing, he goes out there and he sells his ass off for people. The people he wrestles, it's always, the mission is always accomplished. Like, they go out there and they beat the hell out of him. And the offense he gets in is what I just described. People, him getting thrown into people, or him cutting people down to size. And then when they're kind of short like he is, then he's hitting them with his moves. But it's once they're down to it, one knee or both knees or on the ground, or he's flying over the ropes or off the ropes or whatever. And he always gets the job done as far as like the mission that needs to be accomplished. And the reason that I say all this is because even though I'm not big on Bobby Beverly being a part of UWFI or Flash Thompson or the Forgotten Fight team just isn't for me. But that doesn't mean that a couple things could change, or they could get in there with the right people, or the right story could be told, and you could possibly hear me next week or the week after in a few months praising these people. Like, I think all of us as wrestling fans, we don't always owe it to everybody to, like, be a fan of everyone, right? Like, we can like what we like, and we can dislike what we dislike, as long as we're respectful about it, you know? I respect the hell out of the fact that these guys go in there and, you know, put their bodies on the line and really their lives on the line when you really think about it. All these performers are, you know, an inch away from catastrophe every time they land. You know, it's got to be so well done to not hurt yourself and hurt your opponent. So I have nothing but the most respect for everybody involved in these shows, whether I'm a giant fan or not. So just wanted to throw that out there. But once again, this was my recommended show of the week on IWTV. It is Paradigm Pro Wrestling's UWFI Rules Contender Series, Episode 5. And a lot of the reason that I chose that is because, you know, I'm still on that high from that MMA show last night, UFC 257. So this gives you some more MMA vibes, but with a good hybrid mix of professional wrestling. So check it out right now on IWTV. Moving on, our first set of results, we have Impact Wrestling. They've been having, I talk about Impact every week, and I've been happy with it for, you know, years now. I mean, I think they've been putting on great shows, and right now, especially with all the eyes on them, with the AEW crossover and, you know, the involvement of Kenny Omega and all that stuff, I think Impact is just knocking it out of the park right now on a weekly basis. I think that Impact is consistently better than Raw, and has been for the last year, probably the last year plus, and especially this week. Like, I thought Raw was terrible, and I thought Impact was a damn good show. And it started off this week with Eric Young defeating Rhino. Got the win with a figure four on Rhino after, you know, Joe Doering had injured Rhino's knee. So Eric Young with the win. And they basically, like, keep... They put the whole group, Eric Young, Joe Doering, and Diener, are attacking Rhino after the match. They put a chair on his leg, and they're stomping on it, and Cousin Jake comes out for the save to help Rhino out. So it's also good to see Jake Something being more and more involved in a storyline that seems like it really matters in Impact, because this whole group, I always get it screwed up because we talk about a tag team a lot on this show, Violence is Forever, Kevin Koo and Dominic Greeny, who are a part of it. You know, they're all over the indies, but getting a lot of exposure right now through MLW. So, Violence is Forever, not this. Violent by Design. That's who I'm talking about. And it's cool to see Cousin Jake's, like, fighting against them, because, of course, you know, Diener joining up with them and all that stuff. So, you know, really, really good stuff. And it's a good, interesting story that I think a lot of really, really talented people are involved in. So, I like that all across the board, and it was good. And it makes sense for Eric Young to, you know, get a quick win over Rhino, especially given the circumstances. It all made sense. After that, we had Susan and Kimberly with Deonna Purrazzo on the outside defeating the team of Jordan Grace and Jazz. The finish came when Jazz hit a DDT, almost gets the win. Deonna then hits Jazz with the title belt when the ref is distracted. And that causes the win for Susan and Kimberly for the 1-2-3. It's another one of those things, like, Susan and Kimberly, like, I don't hate the team, but I really like Jazz and Jordan Grace. And I, once again, I don't want to sound like a broken record for those of you who listen to the show often, so I'll just leave it short this week. Y'all know I'm a humongous fan of Jordan Grace, and I think they can be doing so much with her, whether it's with the tag teams or as a singles wrestler. And I do think they're just kind of biding a little time, because I feel like she's just, it's like so obvious that she can be such a huge help to, like, the AEW women, that I feel like there's no reason that they wouldn't do something like that soon, where we see Jordan Grace in there, you know, as an Impact wrestler, but against some of the top women from AEW. So that's what I'm hoping we get soon. I do like the team of Jordan Grace and Jazz a lot, though. Like, I think it makes a lot of sense for them to be teaming, but I also think there's a lot you can be doing with Jordan Grace, and seeing her and Jazz, you know, losing these tag team matches, I just don't think it really, I want to say it doesn't really help anyone, but it does. Like, it helps Kimberly and Susan, and Deonna Purrazzo, you know, being the champion and associated with them, like, it all makes sense. But from, like, a fan perspective, when you see someone like Jordynne Grace, like, and what she could potentially be, in my opinion, I'd just like to see her, you know, winning more often, because it seems like she's been losing more often than not in, like, matches that matter lately, and I think she needs to get back on track ASAP. After that, we had Brian Myers defeating Fall of Baugh. Got the win with his clothesline. Basically, Myers fakes an injury during the match, and he low blows Fall of Baugh, which then led to the big clothesline. Myers has done a great job of getting that finisher over, and he has done a pretty damn good job of being, you know, a pretty despicable heel on Impact Wrestling, which is a tough thing for him to pull off because he's such a likable guy if you follow him outside of wrestling and you follow, like, the Major Figure podcast and their YouTube channel and stuff. He's such a likable guy that it's hard for me to see him in that light anymore as, like, this, you know, this, I'm trying to think of the way to say this without cussing really bad, because I try to keep this kind of family friendly if I can. He's a really big jerk on the show. I'll put it that way. He's a really, really big jerk on Impact Wrestling. And in real life, he just seems like one of the nicest dudes. So there's a little bit of that hurdle for me when I see it. But separating the two, I think he has done a great job. And especially if, like, you don't follow that outside the ring stuff, this is just solid heel work all the way around from Brian Myers. So good stuff. And I like that they've kept him and Cardona separate, at least up to this point. So yeah, good stuff. And I like that they're pushing Brian Myers as a singles wrestler. Speaking of Cardona, he did cut a promo too, like a backstage interview. And we're going to get Josh Alexander and Matt Cardona taking on Ace Austin and Madman Fulton on Impact, I believe, next week. So that's an awesome matchup. Like, all great stuff. So yeah, I mean, the Impact just firing on all cylinders right now, like everything that they're doing. And the biggest news of the whole show, which I held off till now because I wanted to lump it in with the main event here. At the beginning of the show, we had, you know, Chris Sabin was basically, to make a long story short, James Storm returns to Impact Wrestling again and says, like, I'll team with you, Chris Sabin. Like Alex Shelley can't be here, and what better, you know, I mean, what better representation of Impact Wrestling, like, of the available wrestlers that he could possibly have? James Storm is, like, he's one of the first people I think about, period, when I think of Impact Wrestling, like, throughout history. First, I think AJ Styles, you know, with his, you know, TNA to Impact Wrestling and all that stuff. Like, AJ Styles is always going to be the first name I think about. But James Storm comes to mind immediately after that. And, you know, him and Chris Sabin are two, like, legitimate TNA originals. As far as, like, from, you know, the TNA days and all that stuff. So it's great to see them as a team. But more importantly, Private Party from AEW basically invades the show, for lack of a better term, and they get a main event match, number one contenders, meaning for the Impact Tag Team titles. So we had James Storm and Chris Sabin taking on Private Party, and the winner is going to go on to wrestle the Good Brothers for the Impact Tag Team Championships. And this match I thought was really damn good. I really, really enjoyed it. And basically what wound up happening is, so Tony Khan, the owner of AEW, is sitting front row next to Jerry Lynn, both from AEW. And Jerry Lynn, by the way, you know, he was, him and AJ Styles were the first ever TNA Tag Team Champions. I remember that. He was one of the first ever X Division Champions. I mean, Jerry Lynn was a humongous part of the early days of TNA, and now he's representing Impact Wrestling. And Tony Khan and Jerry Lynn are front row, and Chris Sabin is towards the end of the match, and Chris Sabin's up on the top rope, and it looks like he's gonna, you know, try to, you know, basically, I'll try to paint the picture for you. Mark Quinn does a Fosbury flop and takes out James Storm on the outside. Then Chris Sabin's up on the top rope, and it looks like he's going to hit Cassidy to get the win for the team. All the momentum is, you know, kind of in Chris Sabin's favor at the moment. Like, it's just him on the top rope, ready to try to get this win. And then the referee gets distracted by, I believe, who actually distracted the ref? it was someone, I can't remember who distracted the ref, but then you see Jerry Lynn come over and actually grab Chris Sabin's leg so like he can't jump off the top, and then Private Party hits the gin and juice for the 1-2-3. So like the finish was really, really well done. And it might have even been Tony Khan distracting the ref, and then that's when that's when Jerry Lynn ran around and held the leg. It was something along those lines, but it was really, really well done, and it made perfect sense for the story, you know, the whole Impact versus AEW story. And Private Party's going to go on and wrestle the Good Brothers for the tag team titles, for the Impact tag team titles, which I think is just genius on so many levels, because Private Party and AEW currently aren't really in the tag team title mix. Like, they've been a successful tag team, and everyone was always going to remember them beating the Young Bucks in the tag team title tournament. They've had some great matches, some great moments, and they're truly, like, AEW originals. When we look back at the history of All Elite Wrestling, in that first kind of class of wrestlers that founded the company, that were there from the beginning, Private Party is one of those tag teams, for sure. And at the moment, they're kind of being overshadowed on AEW. And to be fair, AEW has an incredibly stacked tag team division. Their tag team division is one of the best. I love AEW, but like, if I had to say, like, what's the best thing about AEW? Like, what's the best division? The tag team division might be the best thing they have going for them. It really might. And that's, you know, saying a lot, because the heavyweight title picture is incredible. The women's title picture is, you know, it's moving along. It's getting there. And I think with the help of Impact Wrestling, it will get there faster. And the TNT title and everything that's been done with that has just been so damn good, in my opinion, with Cody's reign, and then Brody's short lane, then reign, then Cody getting it back, and Darby having it now. And I mean, but if I had to choose one thing, I'd say probably the best thing going for Impact, for AEW overall, has been the tag team division from start to finish. And Private Party's kind of lost in the mix right now, but they have a great kind of a arrangement set up with Matt Hardy, who's their manager, who's making a lot of this stuff happen for them storyline wise. And this gives them something really big to do over on Impact Wrestling. Do I think they're going to beat the Good Brothers for the championships? No, I don't think so. I think the Good Brothers will retain, but it gives them something big to do, and it makes them better, and it's going to make them challenge for the belts, and they'll get even more exposure, because believe it or not, I'm sure there are people out there that don't watch AEW that do watch Impact. It's probably not a ton of people that don't watch one and don't watch one but watch the other. But there probably are some fans that are still like lukewarm on trying out AEW, but they've been watching TNA/Impact Wrestling for, you know, 15 years or whatever now, and like they still watch it. Maybe they saw Private Party for the first time on Tuesday and they're like, well, these guys are freaking awesome. Like, now I gotta see what AEW's tag team division is all about. If like these guys are, you know, jumping over here, what else do they have to offer? So I think this, it was all just really well done. It was a great episode. Everything made sense, which in my opinion is like, overall, that's the most important thing of any wrestling show. I say the most important thing is to be entertaining, right? No matter how it is, even if it doesn't make sense, if I'm entertained, I'm entertained. But right below that is like, it's making sense for me, right? Like, that's a big problem that I have with WWE, in particular WWE Raw, because I constantly feel like my intelligence is being just completely insulted. And it's not like I'm sitting here like I'm some super intelligent, super smart guy. It's just, you know, a lot of stuff that just doesn't make any sense at all, or it's like really poorly explained or explained way too late. Impact Wrestling, everything they're doing just makes sense. Even the goofy stuff, the whole who shot Johnny Bravo thing that they still have going on that I rarely talk about here on this show, because it is just so goofy that there's not a whole lot to talk about when it comes to the story. But to be fair, it has been well done. It's been goofy, but it's been well done. Everything on the show has been well done, and it makes sense within the context of the Impact universe, if you want to call it that. So two thumbs up for Impact and what they're doing. I've really been enjoying it a lot. Moving on, we have results for something else I've really been enjoying since the restart. We have MLW Fusion. Show started off this week with Zavari taking on Zenshin, getting the win with a Hammerlock Lariat, which I think is great because, you know, him and Arya Daivari, who you see often on 205 Live, they both use that same Hammerlock Lariat for their finish, which I think is great. With them being brothers, I think it's really cool that they share a finishing move. I like that little wrinkle for whatever reason. I just like that. And Daivari, I don't think he's ever going to be like the world champion of MLW or anything like that. But the dude is doing, in my opinion, the best work of his entire career right now. He's in incredible shape. When you look at him, you're kind of wondering like what's going on there. But at the same time, like, I personally don't really care. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care what he's taking or how he's gotten his body to look the way that it does. Like, it's working for him and he is having good matches. The stories have been good. Like, he looks like $1 million. He looks like he's ready for another run in the WWE. I mean, this guy, he looks great and he's doing great stuff in MLW and gets the win over Zenshin. So good stuff. After that, Simon Gotch defeats Jordan Oliver, got the win by ref stoppage, basically, eventually just chokes him. I mean, I don't know how to really say it. Hit him with a big boot, went into a choke. Jordan Oliver doesn't tap out, and the referee stops the match. After the match, Simon Gotch hits a Gotch-style pile driver onto Jordan Oliver. I like Jordan Oliver a lot, and Simon Gotch, he's doing good stuff. Like, he's another guy I was kind of lukewarm on. I never thought he was that great in WWE. I thought his indie run up to this point had been really, really subpar. Like, not necessarily because of him, but he just had, like, no momentum on the indies. And he was just, it didn't seem, in my opinion, I thought he was just going to get totally lost in the mix. And we were all just going to kind of forget about him, to be completely honest. But he has really revived himself in MLW. And I'm a fan of what he's doing. Like, I think it makes sense. And there's a lot of kind of shoot style wrestlers. You know, Team Filthy comes to mind, you know, Tom Lawler, Guarini, and Kevin Koo. Those kind of guys where you could either join those guys, you can have matches against those guys. Simon Gotch has a lot of parallels to guys like that. So I think MLW, this is a long way of me saying, I think MLW is a really good fit for Simon Gotch, at least right now. And in the main event, we had the MLW world title on the line. Jacob Fatu defeated ACH, got the win with his pop-up moonsault where, you know, he jumps from the second rope up to the top rope, does that moonsault. Christopher Daniels called the BME the best moonsault ever. Basically the same thing. Only Jacob Fatu is much larger than Christopher Daniels. It looks very, very impressive when he pulls it off. ACH is still one of the best in-ring wrestlers in the world. This was a really, really good match. I think Jacob Fatu is the perfect MLW world champion. And basically after the match, so Jacob Fatu is a part of the Sentai Death Squad, and he had Daivari ringside with him. And Mads Kruger, like, shows up at the end of the show, and, you know, Injustice attacked the Sentai Death Squad before Kruger came out. So there's a lot of moving parts there, and Kruger is still undefeated. You know, he went to that double count out with Alex Hammerstone on the on like their big pay-per-view. I'm blanking on the name of it. But yeah, MLW, really, really good stuff. Fatu, awesome champion, great matches. And Fatu, I don't know what his contract status is with MLW, but he's a guy where, like, if MLW has him locked in for a while, you got to just keep highlighting this guy as, like, the star of your company, because he really is. MLW has a lot of great stuff going for them, but Jacob Fatu, I think, is, like, he's a guy who's can't miss, where, like, if his contract runs out with MLW, there has to be interest from WWE and AEW on him. It's just too much of a can't miss home run, next kind of big star vibe I get from him. He checks every box, and he has, like, that family lineage of being a Fatu and everything. It's just, I'm a really, really big fan. And to be fair, he has to live up to a lot of expectation being a Fatu. And he, in my opinion, he's always knocked it out of the park every big opportunity he's gotten. So great for Fatu, and great, more great stuff from MLW. Moving on, we had 205 Live, which featured the first ever women's matches on 205 Live, so that was pretty cool. And it also featured Tommaso Ciampa on 205 Live, which is something I thought I'd really never see. We've probably seen it in the past, maybe. I know he was in the Cruiserweight Classic, him and Gargano, but that was also, like, before, you know, Ciampa really blew up as, like one of the major stars and, like, main faces of NXT. But this show started off, these were all Dusty Classic first round matches, by the way, for the tag team tournament. First match we had was The Way, the team of Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell, defeating the team of Gigi Dolin and Cora Jade. The finish came when Candice basically reverses a pinfall and gets the 1-2-3 on Cora. So I like this. I think that the right team definitely won. I'm a really big fan of Candice LeRae, and the way stable is interesting to me. I think it gives all the people something interesting to do, and it does add layers to Candice and Johnny Gargano being, you know, kind of leaders of this stable. So I'm interested with it. I don't think it's like the greatest thing that's ever happened, but I do want to see more of it and where all these stories kind of go, because there's a lot of talent in those stables. Say what you will about Austin Theory and stuff, but like, he's clearly a wrestling protege. He just got to be really careful and smart about, you know, how he conducts himself outside of the ring, if you know what I mean. But as far as in the ring, and if he's going to be a part of the show, the guy does have a very, very bright potential future, as long as he can, you know, stay on the straight and narrow, let's put it that way. And in the main event, the only other match of the show, we had Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher defeat Ari Daivari and Tony Nese, got the win with the Willow's Bell for the 1-2-3, Tommaso Ciampa pinning Ari Daivari. This was good stuff. I love the team of Ciampa and Thatcher, like the fact that they have like this mutual respect from their feud and their fight pit and all that stuff. And Daivari and Nese, I never expected to win this whole thing. This is kind of the position they're in. They're kind of the perennial 205 Live gatekeepers, where we've seen Tony Nese hold the Cruiserweight Championship, but I don't think we'll see him hold it again, and I don't think we're ever going to see Ari Daivari hold it. There's nothing against those two guys. I just think their current position is to make other wrestlers look good. The wrestlers that they really want to push, like Curt Stallion and Tommaso Ciampa and Thatcher and, you know, this kind of tournament and stuff like that, they're always going to have solid matches, always solid work, and, I mean, what more can I really say? Ari Daivari and Tony Nese, I don't mean this as an insult. They're great utility guys for the WWE on any brand. You can have either of them go in any match, and they will make their opponents look really good. And when they win matches, like, it isn't surprising, because they're both really talented. But there was just no way in the world that Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher were going to lose this match. So this all made sense. Two good matches, two more first round, matches in the tournament for the men's Dusty Classic and the women's Dusty Classic tournament. And we'll, you know, move on, and I'll keep you updated on the results of the tournament every single week up until we have some winners. Moving on, we have results for NXT UK. Started off with Rampage Brown defeating Dave Mastiff. Got the one with the set-out powerbomb. These are just two big dudes who I like the matchup a lot, and they are pushing the heck out of Rampage Brown, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a guy who I could definitely see as being a very interesting challenger for Walter and the NXT UK Championship at some point, especially now where, you know, A-Kid has lost to Walter, and I think they're going to, you know, continue to try to elevate a handful of wrestlers to be credible challengers to Walter in the future, whether it's, you know, the next big show or the big show after that. Throughout this year, they're going to need challengers for Walter, because I don't see him losing that NXT UK championship at all this year, unless there's like some plans change and they want him, you know, in the US for NXT, or they want him on Raw or SmackDown or something like that. As long as Walter's in NXT UK, I think he should hold that belt. Or up until, you know, the time where it's winding down a little bit, because eventually you do have to get the rub off of him. Like, somebody has to beat him so that the big title reign, you know, like, the title reign will mean more if, you know, he loses that belt to somebody and it's a really big deal when they win the belt from Walter. It's a way of making another really big star by beating Walter. But it has to be done at the right time. And I don't think that time is really anytime soon. But I could see Rampage Brown as that person. Like, he's getting a very heavy push from NXT UK. And like I said, rightfully so. Very talented, guy who deserves it. So we'll see kind of where he goes next. But big win over Dave Mastiff, you know, literally. After that, we had Dragunov, a man who has challenged for the NXT UK Championship. And in my opinion, the best match of 2020 in any company. And the best match in the world in 2020, in my opinion, was Dragunov versus Walter from NXT UK. Great to see him in there against Jack Stars. Gets the win with Torpedo Moscow, and then he doesn't pin him after it. He basically just elbows him until the referee stops the fight, or the match, I should say, which is all good. Dragunov showing a mean streak. He wants to do anything he can to get back in that position of getting a title shot. And I could even see that potentially. Like, Dragunov is someone NXT UK is clearly really high on, and rightfully so with him too. And I could see him maybe beating Walter in a rematch if, you know, it's built correctly and they wait a minute for it. But Dragunov very well could be the guy who beats Walter. He's like the one exception, I'd say. If Walter does lose the title this year, I'd like it to be to Dragunov. I think he's the one who's the best. Or maybe Ben Carter, but they need to... Ben Carter's still so new. But Ben Carter versus Walter, a win or lose, I think that that is a awesome matchup. And I feel like we have to get that sometime in 2021. And they're doing some stuff between Jordan Devlin and Ben Carter. Like, yeah, Ben Carter almost beat him last week and stuff like that. So Sam Gradwell was actually watching video of Ben Carter backstage during this show. So there's definitely Ben Carter, I think, is going to be a giant part of NXT UK in the near future. After that, we had Amir Jordan defeating Tyson T-Bone. Basically reverses a pin attempt into his own pin for the 1-2-3. Solid stuff. I expect Amir Jordan to win this match, and you know, he's another guy that I think is kind of slowly, steadily getting going to be just rising the ranks of NXT UK. And in the main event, we had Kaylee Ray defeating Jenny and retaining her NXT UK Women's Championship. Basically, what happened at the finish is Joseph Connors keeps trying to get involved. He winds up getting ejected by the referee. Kaylee Ray basically is in a position to win the match. Joseph Connors grabs the title belt, and the referee takes it from him, and basically Jenny misses Kaylee Ray with the belt, and then Kaylee Ray hits Jenny with a Gory Bomb for the 1-2-3. I love the Gory Bomb as a finisher. I talk about that a lot. I just think it's a really cool, unique move that we kind of, you know, it was great because you had seen, you know, the Guerreros use it, but I feel like it's a move we haven't really seen for a while. And then, yeah, I mean, Kaylee Ray with the championship, it makes sense. I don't think Jenny is right to be the champion right now. I like her, though, but I think Kaylee Ray is just, like, clearly the one who should be the NXT UK Women's Champion right now. This was solid, good storytelling. She retains the belt. Got nothing at all against any of it. Moving on, we have Ring of Honor. So this was cool because they're back. You know, they'd been doing a lot of compilations and best ofs and highlighting wrestlers and stuff, but this is like the first new episode of 2021. It started off with a Pure Rules match where Flip Gordon defeated Rhett Titus. The finish was really interesting because they have a good match, good back and forth, pure match. Flip Gordon is down on the scorecards. It's looking like if this goes to a decision, that Rhett Titus is going to get the decision victory. And Flip Gordon knows this. There's less than a minute left in the match, and Gordon just nails Rhett Titus with the closed right fist, which is illegal. But under pure rules, you get a warning, and then you get penalized for it, or disqualified for something. So he basically used his one get out of jail free card by using the punch. And so he punches Rhett, and then he gets the warning. And while Rhett's still recovering from the punch, he hits a curb stomp, and then he hits his, I can't think of the name of the move. It kind of looks like the, what do they call it? It looks like the detonation kick that TJP does. And basically gets the win because of that. But then after the match, he's getting interviewed in the back, and he is told that he's been disqualified and suspended from the Pure Division. Like, he won the match still, but he's been suspended from the division. So Flip Gordon's response was actually pretty good because he's like, everyone's acting like the Pure Division is all that matters. Like, I'm already the number one contender for the world title. I could get involved with the tag titles. I could go find a tag team partner. Like, I don't need the Pure Division. But he does seem upset about it. But he did play within the rules, but he wound up paying the price because it was clear that he was taking advantage of those rules. So I thought this was all really good. I mean, it all makes sense storyline-wise, and the match was solid. So the finish, like I said, the finish was good because it made sense. So nothing against any of it at all. And then the main event, the only other match on the show, was really, really good. Dragon Lee retained the Ring of Honor Tag Team, the Ring of Honor Television Championship over Rey Horus. Really, really solid match. The finish came when Dragon Lee hit Horus with the Full Throttle Incineration, which is Basically, it's like a enziguri. It's like a step up enziguri with your knee. Looks pretty brutal, though. And it's pretty wild how some of these guys in Ring of Honor are so good at like getting over moves that are so what I would consider to be so basic. Like Roosh does a, you know, his bull's horns is basically it's just a running drop kick, really, at the end of the day. But he does it in a way that looks so brutal that, you know, it beats everybody. So yeah, sometimes less is more in wrestling, and Ring of Honor really proves that, especially with the Pure Division. And I really, really enjoy the Pure Division and the foundation of Rhett Titus, Jonathan Gresham, Jay Lethal, and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. I think Ring of Honor has a lot of really, really good stuff going for it right now, and it's good to see them back. So I'll definitely keep you updated on everything going on with them going forward now that the shows are, you know, back on. And lastly, we have a Being the Elite recap. The show was called Duped this week. Starts off with showing the Young Bucks talking to they're talking to Omega and Gallows and Anderson, and they're basically like, you know, was that all planned? Like last week when you said that they, you know, the good Kenny Omega and Don Callis went out to the ring, and Don Callis introduced what everyone thought was going to be the Young Bucks, what the Young Bucks were told were going to be the Young Bucks, basically saying that the Good Brothers are Kenny Omega's best friend and all this stuff. You had to have seen Dynamite to understand what I'm saying, but basically the Young Bucks know that they're being lied to by Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers. They know that this is all set up, and they feel like they're being taken advantage of by Don Callis, Omega, and the Good Brothers. So Matt and Nick are very, you tell they're very uncomfortable with the current, you know, Bullet Club situation. After that, we get a segment where the Dark Order is all in their hangout or their lair, whatever you want to call it. This is a couple days before Dynamite, so they're basically preparing for Adam Hangman Page to join the Dark Order on Wednesday, which if you watch the show, you know that he didn't join, but they still had like the celebration, and Evil Uno had to like shoo everybody off the stage and stuff, which I thought was actually really, really funny and well done. So basically, they're planning all that out in the Dark Order lair. After that, the Bunny walks past Brandon Cutler, or Allie the Bunny, whatever you want to call her. They're nice to each other to their face, and then the Bunny's flicking him off when she walks away. Okay. After that, we have Private Party talking about Hardy. Hardy is not happy that Private Party isn't doing better, and he's promising them a lot of stuff. And now we've seen where it's going with Impact Wrestling and stuff, and Private Party has now kind of turned heel, and they're really, Private Party, it looks like they are now really taking the advice of Matt Hardy, and they're, you know, they're going to be more successful because of it. Yeah, at least what the story is as of right now. So Private Party is taking the advice of Matt Hardy. They're doing some kind of underhanded stuff. But as far as this episode of Being the Elite, they're kind of trying to contemplate, like, should we be doing what this guy says, basically? And ultimately they wind up, you know, Private Party wants to be kings, and Matt Hardy is promising he can get them there. Let's put it that way. After that, Chris Statlander is talking to her, like her watch or, you know, her recording device, and she's talking about how last week her human abduction experiments didn't go well with Griff Garrison, but then she winds up abducting Brian Pillman Jr. And then they have a really goofy thing where she makes him read this sheet of paper that I don't want to repeat because I don't want to, like, I'm trying to keep this as family friendly as possible, but he basically makes himself say something really stupid, and he wants to leave the room. Honestly, I think this whole thing was really dumb. I'm just going to be totally honest. I like Chris Statlander a lot, especially in the ring, but these segments so far with her abducting people like Brian Pillman Jr. and Griff Garrison, I'm sure it's all going somewhere, but it's a miss for me. And another miss was Peter Avalon talking to Leva Bates. You know, to be honest, them talking wasn't so much the miss, because it is interesting to see them interacting now that they haven't really been like partners or, you know, hanging out together a lot. But the miss more so is that also on the show, Kip Sabian and Leva Bates are continuing their whole thing where Leva breaks it to him that she let him win in video games, and they're going to have another matchup. So like one more, you know, Chip Sabin versus Leva Bates in video games to settle the score, and like I just could not care less about any of that. After that, we see John Silver defend the Being the Elite title against Alex Reynolds. They do a beer pong match, except they're using bottle tops instead of beer pong balls or ping pong balls, I should say, because Brandon Cutler didn't know to pick them up. And John Silver winds up winning, so he retains the BTE championship. And the show ends with Matt and Nick Jackson talking to the Young Bucks, and he charges them a whole lot of money, like $1,000 a week for rent for this new locker room that they purchased from him last week. And Matt didn't pay attention when he signed the contract and all this stuff. And basically the end game here and the moral of the whole episode is Matt and Nick Jackson now feel like they're the dumb baby faces who keep getting duped, and they're just made to look stupid, and all the heels are just constantly getting one over on them. So we'll see where all this heads, but in all honesty, not a great episode of Being the Elite. Sometimes they knock it out of the park and have just incredible episodes, but this episode didn't do a whole lot for me, if I'm being totally honest. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.